This is the Echo Network.
Hello, and welcome to the Fake Nut Report, starring Chris Kamler, Michael Engel, and Jeff Herr, sponsored by Kelly's Westport Inn. And now, the Fake Nut Report.
And welcome into the Fake Ned Report. My name is Fake Ned. Happy for you to join us. We're joined today in studio by Jeff Herr of the Jeff Report. Hang on, say that again. It's going great, man. Thank you for asking. We're also joined by Michael Engel.
That was a dynamite intro.
That was outstanding, wasn't it?
Fantastic.
We've got a big show today on the radio and or on the Fake Ned Report, and we're glad you could join us. We awfully are. I mean, we're very, very pleased. We're going to be joined today by Robert Ford, I think. We're going to be joined by Curtis Kitchen here in a few minutes. We're also going to be joined by Nate Bucati. It's just a great show, and I appreciate that we finally got rid of some of the dead weight on the program. It's very nice. Today is, of course, April 1st, also known as April Fool's Day. So, how you doing, Troy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm good now. That was all right. We thank Lori Kunkel, the winner of the Soundtrack of the Week contest, for that. She stayed behind today. And
those guys are devious. They had a plan to break us all up, and it almost worked.
Almost worked.
They're the Yoko Ono of the Echo Network.
Well, on with the show. We'll let Troy start the show properly now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Royal Man Report. I'm, of course, MKC Royal Man. I'm joined in studio, as you heard, by Michael Engel, the evil fake Ned, Chris Kamler, and Jeff Herr. We're all doing really well. We're going to get right out to the phones. We got a big show today, as they said, so we're going to get right out to Curtis Kitchen. Curtis, how's it going today?
How are you?
I'm good. So it's been kind of an exciting week for you. You've been right in the heart of all this K-State news. There was a lot going on last week. You talked about a little bit on our show out at Kelly's, and now you got a new coach already a week after you lose probably the greatest basketball coach in the history of K-State. So kind of take us through the week and your thoughts on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, a week ago, think about this, a week and a day ago, Frank Martin was still the head coach at Kansas State University, and we thought he was probably gone at that point. And then Monday rolls around, the report comes out early that he has indeed accepted that job, and basically since that point, my phone has I've not looked at my data usage on purpose, I'll put it that way. I've probably used a couple of months in text messaging and just phone calls and things. Ever since then, you know, Tuesday morning rolls around, we have the press conference that I tried to convince people, and I don't think I did a very good job, to be quite honest with you. I tried to convince folks that I thought K-State did the best they could do at that situation when Kirk Schultz, the president at K-State, and the athletic director, John Curry, stood up and took their bullets and had to try to put some sense of, if you'll let me say this, some sense to the madness or put some parameters around what had just happened. Because for a lot of people, they saw it as a 4 or 5 day whirlwind or maybe 2 weeks if you go all the way back to when K-State got knocked out of the NCAA tournament. They saw it in that just little slice of time that their entire basketball program that they had known for the last 5 years had now just been ripped out from them. And there was a lot of anger, and I still think that there is, although I'm hoping that has subsided somewhat, at least at this point, among the fan base. There was a lot of indecision or a lot of fans wondering if they wanted to even support the program, which, again, I hope they've decided that, you know, common sense needs to be a part of this. And then as the week went on, the candidates' names were flying around. The media speculation was huge, obviously. And I think people were getting, by the day, more antsy. And then we get to the end of the week, and Doug Gottlieb throws his name into the equation.
Yeah, and what was that about?
To be quite honest with you guys, all hell broke loose at that point. And it was 2 days of just complete insanity among the fan base, or a lot of the fan base. There were some out there that kept their head. but a lot of them did not. And I think I characterized Doug Gottlieb or the thought of Doug Gottlieb as a head coach, line of coke, if you will. And it was, and I said on Twitter, it's going to hurt like hell when the K-State fans who bought in and got it way up in there, right up inside their nose, it was going to hurt like hell when they came off that high. And I think it did, to the point where when they announced Bruce Weber over the weekend, timing and all those things aside, when it as long as it was not Doug Gottlieb, I think a lot of fans crashed really hard, and it's been a pretty wild weekend. And quite honestly, coming into today where there's not a ton of news, there's some, you know, there's some loose ends to get going with Brad Underwood and some things like that, the assistant coach, who has an offer, and they're trying to work it out, but right now have not made any decisions. It's been a wild weekend, and to have a quiet Sunday after the last week, I don't know that it's not necessarily a terrible thing while everybody, me included, tries to catch their breath on where K-State is at this point.
Well, off the air last week, you talked to me at least about that there was players talking about transferring out of K-State, that your website, CurtisKitchen.com, was just popping because of you had gotten some good leads on people transferring. And so now that Frank is gone, well, first off, how much of that talk had to do with Frank getting out of town? And how does, you know, you kind of talked about this on 610 when you were in studio with those guys. You talked about how how does this, you know, sheet of paper that is found in the trash can end up on the desk over there at K-State and then gets this player suspended, which eventually is the straw that breaks the camel's back? You know, how does this all come together? And now does K-State keep some of those players that might have transferred now that Frank's gone?
Yeah, let's start with the transfers first, and then we can talk about the paper if we need to or want to in a little bit. The transfers, yes. I think the idea now has finally settled on enough people or a larger percentage of people that this program wasn't nearly as healthy as it looked. And I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, but they did a pretty good job of making it look like they were continuing to build and that they had this really good nucleus, of players that were, you know, ready to come back, and it was going to be a strong senior class next year with three guys, and it was just going to go from there. Well, the more I dug and the more it started to come out after Frank left, I started hearing, well, and I talked to you last week that it wasn't nearly as solid as that. There were, and I know the rumor on a couple of message boards was that it was up to as many as six guys were going to leave. And I don't know that it was six. I didn't hear that number specifically in any conversations I had with folks. But I did know of at least two or three, and it could have been as many as four. And that's still substantial, and it's not just guys that were at the end of the roster that, you know, even walk-ons or, you know, a guy who came in and it didn't work out and just wasn't going to be able to play at K-State. I mean, we were talking guys like Will Spradling. We were talking about guys like Jordan Enriquez. I mean, those were the types of guys that were thinking about going. And when Frank made the decision to go, I think that was a huge breath of fresh air for these guys. And I think we're going to find out as this thing moves forward that, you know, after they have a chance to talk with Bruce Weber a little bit, I think they're going to like him. He's been in this situation before. He did that at Illinois. He had an insanely talented team, obviously, with what Bill Self left him. He had to go in there and win that locker room, and he did almost immediately, to the point where that first season they made the national championship game. So, yeah, it's about talent, and I get that. But a coach, those guys still want, they have to be able to play for the coach, or they have to want to be able to play for the coach. So he's done this before. It's been a while, but he's been there. And I think after the things that, I'll say the last 2 years especially, under Frank, I don't know if you guys noticed this watching K-State basketball, like the guys were having any fun whatsoever. And it just, it carries, and it can weigh on a team. And so really for me, for them to have the level of success that they did, while not having any fun, I think it's not to say they become more or, you know, any less disciplined or won't play any harder or anything like that. I think people get that confused sometimes. But if they can just have a little bit more fun while they're doing it, I think that can go a long way. And I heard that today or read that today, excuse me, from John Calipari at the Final Four. They asked him about how he's able to have success, and he said it's about having fun. You know, the kids have fun playing. We still work hard. We still punish when we need to. But for the most part, it is about having fun. They're college kids. And I think that anybody actually at this point, and Bruce Weber is, I think, honestly, is a pretty good choice when you start looking at his resume. I think they're going to have more fun, and I think that did affect. I think once he has a chance to talk more with guys, and I from what I'm hearing, that'll start Monday. That's what he said at his press conference, that he'll have individual meetings with guys. I think that K-State fans are going to be pleasantly surprised with the direction that, or with the words, I guess, that they're going to start hearing from the players that remain at K-State.
Try your mic again.
Oh, there we go. Is that we good?
Well done.
Podcasting 101.
He always turns my mic off. Hey, Curtis, this is Jeff here. We also talked last week, you and I did, about how, you know, there's the kind of the perception that Frank Martin likes to give out to the public about him as a coach, and then there's more towards the reality, and they're actually pretty different. And you hear things like, you know, Frank Martin saying stuff like, oh, I've got parents begging me to recruit their kids, you know, but then on the other hand, you hear, oh, six players that are trying to leave. Can you kind of speak to that a little bit about the difference between kind of how maybe Frank Martin at least tries to be perceived versus kind of what was going on behind the scenes a little bit?
How he's different, you know, public versus with his team?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay, sure. I guess I'll preface it by saying that, you know, there are a lot of coaches out there like that, you know, and that's part of the job. They have to go out and sell people to become part of their program. I mean, that's just what it is. That's recruiting in a nutshell. And so when you're recruiting a guy and you're trying to convince him among all other coaches that your program is the best one for him to be a part of, I mean, it's a dirty business. And you're going to tell guys whatever they want to hear, whatever you think they need to hear, to get them on campus. And then it's a different story. And I think that happened to a lot of guys that ended up at K-State. And I'm not saying they made a wrong choice or anything like that. I'm saying the reality of Frank Martin settled in pretty quickly once they were on campus. And it's not that he wasn't a bad or, you know, a terrible coach or anything like that, but when you've got a guy that has been recruiting you and basically milking you, you know, buttering you up and telling you how great you are, and then you get in there and you're not, or they tell you you're not at that point, obviously, it's amazing. And Frank's example is one of those amplified ones that, you know, when he's not happy, obviously, you know. But, I mean, his attitude and the way that he approached it, I mean, we saw it for the better part of, I guess, what, 4.5 years of what he really, his true personality is. And I know that he shut it down this year or halfway through this year. But, you know, I don't think anybody bought the story that he, you know, that he was just getting old, you know, that he was maturing as a coach and, you know, he didn't want to yell at the guys the same way. And it was because his young kids were sitting behind the bench. You know, I hate to tell him, I don't have any kids. I've been around my nieces and nephews enough that whatever they were going to pick up from you started 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when they were a lot younger. You know, if it's, you know, if they're 5 and 6 and 7 years old now, yeah, they already know who you are. I mean, that's just what it is. And so for him to do that and change, I didn't buy it. And I don't think a lot of people did, like I said. And I can't remember if I said this to you guys last week or not. But basically, the reaction that I'm getting or that I've heard through conversations with folks is really the people who knew Frank best or worked around him the most, maybe that's a better way to say it, the people who had more interaction with him on a regular basis were the least sad to see him go. I think he wore a lot of people out, and it's a breath of fresh air, like I said earlier. It's a different approach. It won't be so in your face or overbearing, or at times, you know, when he wanted to be intimidating. And I think that only works for a little while before people get tired of it. And I think, I think you can take that all the way down to the team that he was managing or, you know, the roster that he was managing. And it just, it got old. And I had someone, I don't remember who it was. It could have been through Twitter or wherever. It was another conversation. And, you know, people, you know, they made the point and said, look, if you look at Frank Martin's history, he's now done this in Miami in the high schools. He did this with Cincinnati, and now he's done it at K-State, where it's a fiery explosion at the end, but when it hits, it scorches the earth. I mean, it's done, and he has to go find someplace else to take his show, and I think that's what's happened here. And when he first got that job, I think I said, you know, give it a couple of years and we'll probably be revisiting the same thing, or at least be able to sit back and see the same thing happen almost cyclically with him now, obviously, in South Carolina.
And I think it's even more kind of prevalent when you think of the one of the best advantages that I think a college coach has is he only has a kid for 4 years at max. So it's kind of hard for something to wear on him. So if he can wear on that many kids in that short of a time, I think that's kind of an indicator.
Oh, we might have lost Curtis Kitchen. So I think we got disconnected from Curtis Kitchen. We were talking to Curtis Kitchen from CurtisKitchen.com. You know, it's a bad situation for K-State. It's definitely a black eye. But, you know, one thing we talked about in the pre-show before we went on the air is this does give a great chance for Bruce Weber to come in and create a huge rivalry with KU, and hopefully he can build some good teams. But, you know, he had the funeral for Bill Self at Illinois and all that craziness. And you look back on all that, you know, what does this mean for KU, K-State, as far as the rivalry goes?
Well, I mean, there's the first connection that's interesting is that, you know, it's Weber and Self, and Weber, of course, followed Self. And the two don't like each other, so that's an interesting aspect of it as well. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see how Weber can really recruit, because that's one of the things at Illinois that he did well with the guys that Bill Self had recruited. But since he's, you know, in the couple of years after, he hasn't done nearly as well at Illinois. So if he can continue to recruit and bring people in, you know, keep a good stream of talent there, yeah, it'll be a significant rivalry within the conference as far as, you know, an in-state rivalry, a local rivalry.
Yeah, and I think part of that is, too, when you look at it, I think Bruce Weber kind of resented the fact that he really didn't get much credit for that whole national championship run. You know, everyone was just heaped all that praise on Bill Self. It was his kids, and he built that program and everything, and I think that was part of what kind of fueled everything. And, you know, coaches are the kind of breed that just don't forget those type of things.
Well,
and
yeah,
they have to. I mean,
they're leaders, and they expect to do well, and they're not satisfied with being behind anybody.
Absolutely.
That's what makes them great coaches.
Yeah, and so I definitely think that, you know, that's definitely going to play into the rivalry a little bit more, which is good. You know, there needs to be, you know, with MU going and at least that rivalry, we'll call it suspended instead of over,
because right.
You know it's going to pick up.
It's going to be back
different
point.
But yeah. I mean, you know, it's good to have a little spice into the KU K-State, because that, I mean, there's some respect there that with the KU K-State rivalry, but this will kind of add a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean,
to it that'll make it a little deeper.
It got to a point, you know, when guys like, you know, before Frank Martin, it wasn't really that big of a deal to go to K-State. It was like, you know, you expect to win there.
31 straight games.
Right.
Or something.
And then Frank Martin gets there, and that's suddenly a tough place to play. You know, that's not the Hoctagon of Doom or whatever the heck they want to call it. No, that's just he has players that play hard, and he brought in good players. You know, if Bruce Weber can do that, if they've got a good product on the court, that's what makes a rivalry.
Yeah, absolutely. That's key number
nothing
one.
Else.
That's key number one right there.
Yeah, I mean, if they're not playing any good players, well, it's not going to matter. I mean, KU's going to beat them every year, but that's what it comes down to, is if you can bring in players.
And once again, we are experiencing a little bit of a technical difficulty here, but Chris,
this looks like an internet connection issue.
Okay.
We're back live.
So,
all right, good.
We're
back live.
So,
all right, good.
We're
back live.
So,
all right, good.
We're back live.
So,
all right, good. Is this dubstep?
Break it down if you're listening on the podcast.
That was awesome. We have to clip that out from now on.
Wow.
That'll be my part of the intro.
You're back live.
So I think what we need to do at this point is let's go ahead and wrap this up. Just kind of a closing thought on this. Jacob Pullen came out and said that Bruce Weber wasn't a good enough coach for K-State because Bruce didn't feel that Pullen was good enough to play for him. That sounds like a lot of sour grapes, and we don't have a K-State guy on here to defend him, so I don't want to rip on the guy more than I did on Twitter, but I would have loved to ask Curtis about that, and maybe we'll try to get Curtis back at the end of the show or something. But we're going to go ahead here and take a quick break and get everything back together and make sure all of our interwebs are working appropriately. And then we're going to go to Nate Bucati of 810 Sports. He's on the morning show, of course, with the Border Patrol. And we're going to talk about some KU football, KU women's basketball. And, of course, he's the Fox Sports reporter for Fox Sports Kansas City. So a lot coming up to do with KU basketball and Royals baseball on the other side. We'll be right back.
Recipe. Ah! Southern fried. doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Limitosis.
All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl games. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to... Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back to the Royal Man Report. Hey, really quick, if you guys haven't been with us very long, you don't know that our little coming in and out of breaks, you know, they call them bumpers in the industry. We're not in the industry. Our little coming in and out of breaks, that's by 49 Stones. They just had a single. It was actually on Alice 1029, I think it is, not too long ago here in Kansas City. So they're actually getting some radio time here in Kansas City. But check out 49stones.net. They're good folks, and they've been with us pretty much since the beginning. So ever since I found them because of the Big Dumb Fun Show, they've been a big part of our show. Well, we had a little bit of trouble there going out with Curtis Kitchen, but if you want to talk more about K-State, definitely head over to CurtisKitchen.com and check that out. We're going to be joined here by Nate Bucati in just a few minutes, but in the meanwhile, we kind of announced this last week, or we teased it a little bit, but we can officially announce that we are partners with Baseball Prospectus. For the Sunday of All-Star Week, we will be joining them out at the Negro League Baseball Museum, and it's quite the list, guys. It's everybody you can think of from Baseball Prospectus, and of course, it's the up-and-in guys, Parks and Goldstein, so they're going to be out there, and we're going to be out there with them, and they're going to do a panel. I don't have all the details yet, and I don't know. It's going to be open to the public. I don't know if there's a charge or not. It may be just a donation to the museum, but I'm real excited about this. This is a great opportunity for the Royal Man Report. It's great for Kansas City to have Baseball Prospectus back in town. And Sunday, July 8th, it's going to be quite the little day.
Yeah, and I think it's great that we get to do this at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, which is, you know, somewhere that gets overlooked in Kansas City. And can definitely benefit from, you know, bringing in these people, being a national kind of audience. If people are here for the All-Star game, they can go to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum and see something that they haven't seen before and that you don't get that story in any other cities. So it's great. It's a good partnership for the museum. It's good for us. It's good for Baseball Prospectus. It's good for baseball fans.
And I don't know, Mike, do you have anything up on Kings of Kauffman for this yet? It kind of broke to us yesterday, so we haven't had a lot of time. Mike was busy watching his basketball team do awful well last night. So.
Well, they did well for about 4 minutes.
Was there something going on with that?
The only 4 minutes that mattered.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's all
that
mattered.
What they've done.
I saw you guys wearing blue shirts. I just thought those were Royal shirts. It's not the case.
No.
Not tonight, no.
This particular shirt has a banner for every Final Four that Kansas has been to.
Mine
there are 14.
Mine is in the mail. I still have not gotten mine yet.
But it looks all faded, so you specifically bought a retro faded, so it looks old, so you look cool.
This is just an old one. This is just an old one from one of the conference championships they won. I can't remember.
We're ready to
one of the many. Which one?
I can't remember.
Six?
It's
four?
It's in there.
Oh, God.
Bringing it back to baseball here, it will be on it's so much fun to give Chris a hard time. That never gets old.
Nope.
So we're going to be joined at the All-Star weekend, All-Star Sunday, July 8th. It'll be with LinkedIn.com's Baseball Industry Network. Us and Royals Authority are going to be bringing in the Baseball Prospectus guys. We're going to have Kevin Goldstein, Jason Parks, John Parado, who actually, if you are a baseball prospectus reader, you can go out and read that he actually picked the Padres and Royals to win their divisions. Writes a great article on it. I might have to try to get him on the phone at some point to talk about that. Bradford Doolittle, who probably has the best name. Jeff Houston and Joe...
Joe Amrahi. Yeah,
Amrahi.
Jeff Houston is a Kansas City guy. He actually lives here. If you've been on Cots baseball contracts, that's what he does. He's got all that contract information.
And then they're bringing Corey Schwartz and Tyrone Brooks, Pirates Director of Player Personnel. But we're going to talk about that more later because I believe we are ready to be joined on the phone.
We will be when we call him.
Okay, I'm going to stop talking now.
Yeah. Is this the Nate Bucati?
Hello.
Hey, what's going on, man?
For some reason, I have not seen any video here. Am I doing... operator error on my part.
I don't know.
Let me try to call you back.
Okay.
I'm figure this out.
That's cool.
I'll call you back.
No problem.
We're actually gonna have a live video of our guest who's not in studio.
This will go
is
figure.
This, is this a first for us? This will be a first.
I think it might be the first.
That's impressive. I am taking odds right now on Chris's computer overloading during this because
Blow up. Oh. See,
look at that.
The good part is that we have video. The bad part is that we have video of Nate Bucati.
I'm trying to get myself backlit. That's the television term, so that you can't see my face as well.
See, you're a TV guy, so it's all good. Hey, welcome to the Royal Man Report, man. We appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight.
I'm happy to be here.
Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fantastically. Hey, one of the reasons we wanted to have you on, not only for your Royals knowledge, which we'll get to here in a second, but also because of you are well affiliated with the University of Kansas. They're having oh god, look at that!
Oh, there it is.
Nice.
Boys,
drink it in.
and we have four folks on our show, and two of them are just disgustingly dripping wet KU fans. So. I don't know. You three can all talk, and I'm just going to sit here and shut
all right,
up for a few
cool.
minutes.
Hey, really
remember
quick.
That time we went to the championship game?
we'll talk KU for a little bit because I don't know if you've heard or not, but there's a bit of a game tomorrow night. Just right off the cuff, Nate, first impressions of the game tomorrow night. What do you think?
Well, I think that I'm really good with words, by the way. That's what I do for a living. The way I would put it is this, people talk about Kansas having multiple national championships. They won two in my lifetime, and both have the word miracle attached to the actual winning of the national title. That's how hard it is to win a national championship, for Kansas, for anybody. You got Danny and the Miracles. You got Mario's Miracle. It took a miracle to win the national title both times. I would say that if they pulled it off tomorrow, that would almost classify as another miracle because I don't think anybody out there will be picking Kansas to win this game. Because Kentucky is just loaded from top to bottom. I didn't think this – I was hoping this Kansas team would make it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament going into the year. So to be at this point has already blown my mind. But I wouldn't count out anything that these guys could do at this point because they've already surprised me so many times.
And, no, I'm right there with you. I thought at the beginning of the season I said, ceiling for this team is Sweet 16 – and everything beyond that is just gravy, and it's been a lot of gravy to this point. I mean, I honestly cannot believe they make it. But when I look at Kentucky, have you seen Kentucky play in person? Did you go to the game earlier this year? Were you anywhere in the tournament? Have you seen him play?
I've seen him on TV a bunch of times, but I have not seen him in person yet.
Yeah, I mean, when I see him on TV, it almost looks unfair, really, how good they are. I mean, they're just – that game that they played earlier in the season, I mean, both Kansas and Kentucky are completely different teams since they were the second game of the season. But that's the only time in my life that I can remember thinking that Kansas should not be on the same floor with the team. Yeah. Now, they've improved a lot since then, but, I mean, it's just such a tough matchup.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky's improved a lot since then, too, most likely. So it is, you know, and I, as much of a KU homer as I am, if I had a vote for National Player of the Year, I'd give it to Anthony Davis, too, because, you know, he does things on the defensive end of the floor. He's a presence on the defensive end of the floor you just don't see from Thomas Robinson. And, I mean, basically take Jeff Withey's defensive presence, increase it a little bit, and then make him a force on the offensive end as well, and that's what you have in Anthony Davis. And he's not the only star they have. So I think Kansas can play with them. The biggest concern that I have if I'm a Kansas fan is this team has shown the ability to be great for stretches of maybe 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. And against what is a pretty imperfect, you know, landscape of college basketball right now, there aren't any really great teams to me outside of Kentucky. That's good enough for this team to win so far and get to the national title game. To me, if they beat Kentucky, either Kentucky's going to have to be way off their game, or they're going to have to find a way to sustain those five-minute runs for more like 10 minutes at a time and only have a couple of bad minutes the whole game. And anything's possible. We've seen huge upsets in the NCAA tournament before. So, you know, it's possible for them to put it all together, but we haven't seen them do it all tournament long to this point.
Yeah, they're having a lot of difficulty with putting together a good 40-minute game, and there's usually a 10-minute stretch where they just – KU just looks terrible, and they don't look like they should be anywhere near – this level of a game. So that's my concern going in is, you know, are they going to be able to hang with them? And the first time they played this year, they weren't able to hang with them at all.
Well, they were tied at halftime, I think, or it was close at halftime. Yep. And then, you know, Kentucky just kind of found a different gear and pulled away. Now I'll say, I think Thomas Robinson is much more experienced at handling the types of defensive and double teams, you know, that he looked completely lost when he saw that the first time around, because he'd never been the focus of another team's defense before in his, you know, in his collegiate life. So there, you know, there are some things, and I'll say this, if Kansas can find a way to get to the under four timeout at the end of the game and be within a basket, you got to like their chances. I mean, they just seem to have something. I don't know what it is, but they seem to have something to where, you know, they rise at that time. And my favorite part of this whole podcast so far is watching Chris looking completely disinterested while the rest of us.
Yeah, we have a slogan here on our show called "Back to Baseball," and I think I'm going to go ahead and invoke the "Back to Baseball" clause at this point in time, because this literally is killing me.
Yeah, I was gonna move into that. I just, before we did, Nate, I wanted to get, can we get a prediction from you? What do you think?
If I have to make a prediction, I think that it's going to be a close game for a while, but around 8 minutes to go in the game, you're going to see Kentucky start to pull away. Like I said, I feel like they have too much. And I think Kansas is going to have some runs in them where they can, kind of like what Louisville did yesterday, where they, you know, they fight back, maybe tie it up, get it close. But there's just too many horses on the Kentucky side. But I certainly will not count Kansas out in the ball game at all.
Yeah, I like Missouri's chances probably tomorrow night against Ohio State. Is where my bracket was. So it kind of tells you where I'm at. But
well, you were close.
I don't have a single team in the Final Four, so I got no room to talk.
All
there.
I got's Kentucky.
We're talking to Nate Bucchetti from 810 WHB, the Border Patrol, one of the best radio shows in town, and you are also. Good Lord, man! How many jobs do you have? You work for Fox Sports Midwest. You are a sideline reporter for KU football and women's college basketball. You work for the radio station. I mean, you must just be. I mean, that kind of looks like a palatial estate. You've got a really nice hanging chandelier behind you. You clearly must just be rolling in dough. So.
Let's see if I can get that chandelier. Is it in there? Yeah, that's some high dollar Home Depot stuff right there. It's a lot of work, and some of the guys I work with give me a hard time and ask me when I'm going to give up some of the other jobs that I have. But Kevin Harlan, who's to me one of the greatest broadcasters I've ever known, told me early on when I got to meet him that he thinks all good broadcasters have a healthy amount of paranoia. That You know, because he's one of those guys that he won't turn a job down, you know. And it's clear that he's at a point in his career where he's could easily do that. I'm not, but I just, you know, like it's a good way to keep yourself recession proof. You know what I mean? You never know when the radio station is going to get tired of you and fire you, or maybe, you know, the TV station does. So just keep doing as many things as you can, and you kind of insulate yourself a little bit.
Well, obviously we have a bit of a Royals focus here. And one of my first questions is how do you think this team's going to do in your expert opinion? I mean, we've seen ultimate highs of optimism a few weeks ago, and then we kind of went through that week of injuries, and now here we are kind of, you know, in the middle of it. Where do you kind of see us after we break camp? What do you see us doing?
Well, before, right when camp opened up, I picked the team to win 79 games, and I guess some people look at that and say that's a pessimistic viewpoint, but I believe the team won 71 a year ago. And that would be, you know, if that's right, that'd be an 8-game improvement. And that's a lot, you know. And I think this team has the ability to make that improvement because of some of the young guys getting better. But there are also guys last year that had career years. And the odds usually tell you that those guys are, you know, they're due to take a step back. We never think about that when we get all excited in spring training. We just think, well, Alex Gordon's going to do what he did last year, and Jeff Francoeur's going to do what he did last year, and then all these other guys are just going to continue to get better, and it usually doesn't work out completely that way. So, but I do think the team is capable of taking that. To me, that's a big step forward. 8 wins is a big step forward. They still don't have the answers in the starting pitching to me that have me willing to call them an above 500 team. Now, maybe some guys will step forward, but that requires guys doing some things that they've never done before. I mean, that requires Danny Duffy to actually step forward and become a frontline caliber starter. He hasn't done that yet, and not his fault. He's only had, you know, what, 4 months of major league experience. Luke Hochaber hasn't done it yet. He's got to step forward, take that big step. We've seen him do it for a month at a time, but that's not what makes, you know, a frontline starter. It's for a full year. So and now with the injuries added on to that, I'm going to stick with 79 because I still think that there's just a lot of other positive momentum. I think that all the contract signings, which you might be getting to later, just gives this team a little bit more momentum to bounce back from some of those injuries. So, and that's another reason they might regress a little bit in other regards this coming year is, gosh, do you guys remember a serious injury that they had to deal with all of last year?
No.
No, there wasn't one. I mean, Matt Traynor, that was about it.
Yeah, the odds, and I mean, yeah, that one didn't really seem to hurt the team too much.
Right.
The odds are that that's going to come back around, and we've already seen it. You know, hopefully the Royals are done with it by this point.
And you know, I think that I hope that your 79 prediction is wrong because I have a bet with Chris.
No, I have about the same prediction you do, Nate, and my esteemed colleague Jeff over here is.
We have the 81 wins over under. I've got the over. He's got the under.
There's no way we scrape 81
if they
wins.
Go,
there's no way.
We're going to donate $100 to Billy Butler's charity, Bishop Sullivan Center.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
To the loser, we'll do that. So I hope you're wrong for that sake, for my sake, my bank accounts anyway. But you talked about the pitching staff, how we don't have the answers right now, and I completely agree. But I'm wondering, from what you've kind of seen and heard about with Rose spring training, who are you kind of looking at that, you know, you talked about Hochaver's never done it, Duffy's never done it. I mean, do you see any of those guys maybe stepping up and doing it? I mean, Hochaver showed some good signs last year. We've kind of seen some good stuff from Duffy in the spring. I mean, who are you looking at to really kind of take a step forward on the pitching staff this year?
You know, it's a great question. And I do maintain that if this team's really going to take – I think they've done so many things right in terms of locking up these guys to long-term contracts. The core players, the Hosmer's the one guy left they need to do. But they've done all those things right. But the one thing that's still missing is developing some young stud starting pitching. They developed some stud bullpen guys, but the starting pitching is where it's at. And that, to me, if this is – okay, they've obviously turned themselves into a respectable, legitimate team that you don't just take for granted, like the doormat they were during the early 2000s. But are they going to take the next step to actually contending for the division, especially against a team like, you know, the Tigers? To me, the one team that you say, okay, can they actually compete with these guys? And that's going to be, does Duffy become a real, you know, top three guy in the rotation? Does maybe Lamb or Montgomery, you know, a couple of those guys have to become that if they're really going to turn into that type of, you know, the Devil Rays type or the Tampa Bay Rays type team. In order of who I'm looking at, the guy that intrigues me the most right now in the immediate future is Mendoza.
Yeah.
I'm really, I wasn't hoping for Paulino to get hurt. To be honest with you, what I was kind of hoping for was Duffy to get sent to the minor leagues to get a little more seasoning. Because if you guys look at the at how many innings he got in AA and AAA, it's not very much. I mean, he's not a very experienced pitcher, and he didn't perform well at the major league level last year. He's got great stuff, but to me, buy a little service time, get him some more training, and let the other guys pitch. But now that Paulino's hurt, we're going to see Mendoza either way. And I'm just excited because, you know, we have seen guys at 27, 28 years old actually turn a bit of a corner. And I want to see it. I'm not saying I'll predict that it's going to happen, but this is your last chance to see if he can do that. So I'm excited to see him. Duffy's got the potential. I just feel like he's still figuring things out. He's still a ways away. But those would be the two guys that, to me, have the best chance of becoming some sort of breakout type players. Hochevers, just to me, he's got too much of a track record already. So, well, we saw it with Gordon. You know, Gordon figured it out 4 or 5 years into his career. But to me, you know, at this point, I'm ready to kind of say Hochevers is what he is. This is maybe his last chance to really prove that he can be something different.
We're finishing up with Nate Buchetti. Nate, I don't know how you do like a real radio clock because we're all backed up. We tried to cram 3 great guests into the show and we're failing miserably. So I don't know. You must be a pro at cramming, you know, 19 guests into an hour or something. So
big mistake on your part by booking me because I'm going to ruin your clock with long-winded answers.
Well, we've got this last question that I think we're very, very interested in. You working with Fox Sports Kansas City. We got an opportunity the other night to listen to the broadcast of them doing a spring training game on television. And you know how horrible we are on Twitter. And some of the announcers kind of got some not so positive reviews. And I think it's probably a little too early to trash anything, but we're horribly passionate about the work you guys do on the Fox broadcast and the radio. So we're very excited some of us are excited for the change and some of us are still kind of looking at the past, but how do you see your guys' coverage changing this year or what do you look forward to in your guys' coverage on television this year?
You know, I can't really give you a good answer on that because I don't know Steve and Rex really at all. I mean, I've met them both a couple of times. I met Rex, you know, he used to come over, I think it was when Buddy Bell was the manager from the visiting dugout when he was doing the Angels games, and he talked to Buddy for a little bit. And maybe it was when Tony Pena was the manager. And, you know, you'd shake hands with him, introduce yourself, but nothing more than that. And Steve I've met a few times just because of, you know, he's been at Memorial Stadium in Lawrence doing, you know, Fox College telecasts of the KU games. And he always comes down to say hi to Bob Davis. And he knows everybody because he's actually a Kansas City guy. He grew up here. So they both seem like extremely nice guys, you know, very, very just good guys. And so and everything I've heard from all the other broadcasters I've talked about working with them, you're going to love working with these guys. They're in a good mood every day. They don't have egos. They're just, you know, excited to do the job. So, I mean, I look forward to getting to know them a little bit. But, you know, my role on the broadcast for the most part is solely pre and post game with Joel Goldberg. And just to give you guys a little window, you know, my day basically during baseball season consists of get off the morning show. I call TJ, who's the producer of the pre and post game, the Boulevard Royals Live, and do a conference call with him and Joel Goldberg and usually Jeff Montgomery, who does the show with us. And we just go over, you know, we brainstorm for a while. What do we want to talk about today? What are some of the storylines? I go home, take about a 2-hour nap, then I go to the ballpark, get there at about 3, and we go to work. You know, so my work with the actual play-by-play guys is very limited. You know, I mean, I see them out there, we talk, but I don't really work with them. I work with Joel and TJ and Monty, and those guys, from what I understand, are still going to pretty much be the pre- and post-game. So I don't expect our stuff to change hardly at all. Now, you know, during the game, that's a different story. I'm not trying to dodge the question, but I can't really.
No, that's cool.
You know, I can't tell you how it's going to be different or not.
As long as we can still see you just get completely thrashed by Ned Yost in the post game interviews. I swear to God, I can't remember how many times I stayed up past 10 on the 7 o'clock games just to watch how you are just going to get completely destroyed by Ned. It fills my heart.
I was kind of nervous sitting behind you.
Take like this much credit for the, you know, Ned. a star on Twitter, because that was like the running joke after every game. And it actually made me smile when I'd come out of the locker room and my Twitter feed would buzz and I'd look at it and I'm like, oh, fake Ned Yost is destroying me.
And you know, I sat behind you at one of the Blog to the K's and I was like, man, I hope whatever he has, Ned doesn't get something thrown at him, because I'm going to be right in the way if he dodges this. So
awesome, yeah, man. Yeah. Nate, thank you very much. I think we saw your wife pass behind you, and you know, we say hi to her, and thanks for putting up with our garbage. But we were supposed to have you on.
It's a podcast.
It's a podcast. We're on the internet. What's the worst that could happen? Hey, how you doing? Wow.
They enjoyed the chandeliers, by the way, Kelly, in our palatial estate. So
definitely the better half there, man. That's quite the upgrade for you. Yeah. So well done.
way to play up.
Coverage, boys.
Nice job. Hey, we'll continue to listen to you on the Border Patrol on 810 and pre and post. And seriously, the post game is outstanding, especially the interview portion. So Nate, thank you very much for jumping on the show, and we'll be in touch soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Take care. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get Robert Ford on the line, and we will be right back shortly.
Morons podcast lately. You've missed this.
I got all this talent and I can't make it work.
Hey, you need to follow me on Twitter.
I just did.
You did?
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Hey, Nick, you're a big-nosed idiot. You know what I mean? You gotta be able to handle it. So
you are a big-nosed idiot.
Fair enough.
Like, alcohol is so
are you
much.
Stoned right now?
No.
Okay. Kevin Keatsman.
Great at what he does, man. I shouldn't say this because it'll piss people off. Or I should say this because it'll get people going.
Serene Petro.
Hypocrite.
Bob Fesco.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about a diva?
Oh,
this guy bitches from the second he walks in until the second he leaves.
I do not.
I'm surprised. I'm honestly surprised he doesn't wear makeup on the show.
My job is not an easy job, but it's not a hard job either, but it's a simple job.
I admit, Danny, he could not possibly get a job on his own.
Catch the entire interview with Nick Wright only at ramblingmorons.com.
Yeah.
You follow me on Twitter.
I just did.
You did?
Kelly's Westport. It's the place where you buy beer. This guy came into the bar the other day and was telling me that they had friends in town and went down to that fancy bar district downtown. They went to one of those swanky no ball cap bars and ordered a beer. Now, this wasn't one of those imported beers. It wasn't even one of those microbrew deals. This bartender rang up the tab and he wanted $27. For three dadgum beers, $27 for some beers. That isn't right. That isn't fair. So he took them down to see us. We got them some nice big beers for half that price. Even had one of the ladies find a fella there. Got him some pizza. Listen, don't fall victim to those overpriced, no ball cap bars down there. You might as well take your money and throw it in the trash. Kelly's Westport, it's the place where you buy beer. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell him the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome into the Royal Man Report. I am Casey Royal Man, and you know who we all are at this point. Mike, Jeff, Chris.
If you don't, really, you're listening to the wrong show.
Right, right. So we're going to go right to the phones again. Three big guests this week. We're going right to the phones for another big Royals guest. We got Robert Ford from 610 pre- and post-game show, and the man that has the most clever things to say to the world's worst callers. It's just something that I know a lot of people just, they get on the post-game show just to hear how Robert's going to handle some of these callers you get. And Robert, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
So you, of course, do the pre- and post-game show for 610 Sports, and you've been doing that for a little while now. You started out doing it with Greg, I believe, with Greg Schaum, and then now you're kind of doing
that's
it.
Right.
And now you're doing it on your own. How long have you been doing the post-game show?
This will be my fourth season covering the Royals.
So now in 4 years, this team has changed drastically. What's kind of your outlook for the team this year versus years in the past?
Well, I mean, in the past, it was, well, we keep hearing about all these great prospects. When the heck are they going to get here? Because what's at the major league level isn't all that great. And now it's more about the future is now. And all the prospects that we'd been hearing about for several years are finally at the big league level or very close to the big league level. I mean, it's a very exciting time to be involved with the Royals, whether you're on the Royals, whether you're covering the Royals, or whether you're a fan of the Royals.
Now, you spent a lot of time down in Arizona, of course, catching up with the team and seeing what was there this
like
year.
Like 6 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah.
way long.
What a rough job. You get to watch baseball for 6 weeks in Arizona. you can't go wrong there.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Who in Arizona really impressed you?
The guy who was the most impressive certainly was Lorenzo Cain. I mean, he came in knowing that the center field job was his to lose. The Royals tried to act like it was a competition. I think that was largely because Cain just doesn't have a whole lot of big league time. I believe it's 169 at-bats in the big league. So, I don't think the Royals want to just come out and say, well, we're going to hand the job to a guy who's pretty unproven. But Cain came out and basically left no doubt that he should be the everyday center fielder for the Kansas City Royals. And that's always good to see because a lot of times you'll see guys in Cain's position who are coming up from the minor leagues, and it's their job to lose, and they lose it because they just don't play very well, or they still get the job, but there are questions about whether they're going to be able to hold on to that job. And certainly what someone does in spring training who is unproven doesn't eliminate all questions about whether they can produce at the big league level, but I think the Royals certainly have to feel a lot more comfortable handing the job to Cain now after the spring he had, as opposed to if he had a lackluster spring.
Now, on the flip side of that, is that kind of the same situation that you see as far as Johnny Giavitella, who did struggle for the majority of spring and is now going to be starting the year in Omaha?
Yeah, the Johnny Giavitella thing is interesting because I think that, I mean, it's always been known that defense was a bit of an issue for him. And so that's been known. And we saw it at the major league level last year when he came up. He certainly looks like someone who's going to hit very well at the major league level, but the defense is such an important part of it, especially when you play an up-the-middle position like second base. And the way I understand it, the Royals basically made it clear, and they've made it clear throughout Giavitella's career that his defense needs to get better. And he came to spring training this year, his defense wasn't better. And I think that, more than anything, is why he wound up going down. Now, if Johnny Giavitella were hitting 350 as opposed to the 250 that he hit when he was up in big league camp, I think he gets a longer look and maybe even wins the job, because then you might be willing to overlook some defensive issues. But the fact that he wasn't tearing it up offensively, he wasn't awful, but he certainly wasn't great offensively in spring training, and you combine that with the fact that his defense really didn't look that much more improved, well, then that makes it pretty tough to go north with him if you're the Kansas City Royals.
So, kind of staying on the Johnny Giavitella thing, they sent him down saying they didn't like what they saw in him in the spring. They put Chris Getz on the team saying they did like what they saw him in the spring. But then you get a guy like friend of the program, Tommy Hotovy, who has an outstanding spring but doesn't quite make that left-handed bullpen. If you were the Royals general manager or coach, does Hotovy make your 25-man roster?
No, because, I mean, it's Hotovy's a non-roster player. And it was going to be tough for any non-roster pitcher to make this bullpen because the Royals, not only do they have a bunch of quality bullpen arms on the 40-man roster, but they have a bunch of quality bullpen arms on the 40-man roster with options, which is not a luxury that a lot of teams have. And, I mean, if you just look at the way the bullpen is set up now, I mean, Jeremy Jeffress looked good at times this spring, struggled at times this spring, but hey, he made this bullpen last year at the start of spring training, and I thought he looked better this year in spring training than he did last year. He's going to AAA. Lewis Coleman, ERA under 3 out of the bullpen last year, was one of the Royals' better relievers in the second half. He's starting off at Omaha. So, I mean, if you're starting off Coleman and Jeffress at Omaha, and they're on the 40-man roster, and they're guys who would make a lot of other teams' bullpens, and frankly would have made Royals' bullpens in the past, and it makes it tough to bring Hotovy along. Now, I like Tommy Hotovy a lot, and I know that the Royals do too, and I don't think it's out of the question that if the Royals have a need for a left-handed reliever,
that they wouldn't bring Tommy Hotovy up at some point. But, you know, when you come into camp as a non-roster player, it's always an uphill battle, but it's even more of an uphill battle when there are a bunch of guys on a 40-man roster who are simply ahead of you.
And, Robert, kind of along the same lines of if you were GM of the Royals or anything, if you – was there a player that you think – got maybe didn't make the team or maybe that has made the team that you think probably should have gotten sent down maybe to start the season in AAA and maybe getting a little bit more seasoning down there?
I can't say that there's anyone that I look at on this roster that I think and should have been sent down to AAA of the young players. I mean, I was a little surprised that Kelvin Herrera made the bullpen, but I mean, he's had a very good spring. It's not like I was surprised because I figured, well, he's a young guy. He has the least amount of major league experience of the guys who are competing for bullpen jobs. So I thought that would be the reason he would go down. But he's looked very, very good, and he's had an excellent spring. So that was a little bit surprising. But, yeah, I can't say, I mean, of the young players, if there's anybody that I look at and think, well, this guy should start off the year at AAA.
Robert, what on earth are we going to do at second base? How big of a liability is that position going to be for us?
Well, it depends how you look at it. I mean, certainly offensively, there definitely could be some questions there because, I mean, Getz, he may wind up hitting for a decent average, but he doesn't have a whole lot of pop, and it's a little easier to tolerate a singles hitter when they're hitting well over 300, which Getz hasn't really shown that he's able to do at this point. And Betancourt, I mean, he may hit for a decent average, but obviously doesn't get on base at a high rate. He does give you a little bit of pop in terms of doubles. He'll knock a few balls out of the ballpark from time to time. But certainly up the middle is positions where you want to be strong defensively. And, I mean, the Royals are strong at shortstop with Alcides Escobar. They were strong at catcher before Sal Perez got hurt, and now they're going to have to go with Humberto Quintero, who's very good defensively, and Brian Peña, who's gotten better defensively, but still isn't quite even average, let alone a little, you know, I mean, he's not quite even average defensively behind the plate. And you have Lorenzo Cain in center field, who's above average defensively. So second base, I think the Royals will definitely be above average defensively there, with Betancourt out there. I mean, Betancourt's looked fantastic defensively at second base. And I know there are a lot of Royals fans out there who believe that Unieski Betancourt can't do anything right, but he's very good defensively at second base, and I think he has the potential to be an above-average second baseman defensively. Chris Getz, I think, is maybe a tick above-average defensively. Betancourt's probably better than him defensively at second base. So, I mean, when you talk about, well, what are the Royals going to do at second base, is that going to be an issue? I think it may be an issue offensively, but defensively I think it should be fine. And when you look at this lineup, if the Royals don't get a whole lot of offense from second base or from catcher, then I think they should be in decent shape because they should be able to get enough offense from the other seven spots in the lineup to offset that.
Now, the other thing that we've been kind of having problems with, I guess, for this Royals team, other than second base, is, of course, pitching. Luis Mendoza makes the team because of Paulino getting hurt. You know, I kind of wonder if this isn't a Royals injury just to kind of make space for a guy that they really didn't know what to do with. Are you buying Mendoza?
I am. I mean, guys aren't hitting him very well. I mean, he's got a very good sinker that he's able to throw on both sides of the plate. He's able to keep the ball down. He has a good curveball, good changeup. He's able to locate all three of his pitches for strikes. He's able to throw his changeup on both sides of the plate. I mean, what he has done over the last year plus, I don't think is a fluke. Now, whether it's going to be able to translate long-term at the major league level, that remains to be seen because he doesn't have this sort of stuff where he can get away with a ton of mistakes. He can't get away with leaving the ball up even just a little bit. He has to have good location. He does not have a big margin for error. But certainly what he's done to this point, he's earned everything he's gotten. And, you know, based on what the Royals have said, if Paulino had the tendonitis in his forearm, then or the injury in his forearm, then they would have put Mendoza in the bullpen as a long reliever, and Paulino would have been in the rotation. So I think these first two or three starts for Mendoza are going to be very, very key. If he struggles at all, then I think they're going to put Paulino back in the rotation once he's healthy and put Mendoza in the bullpen as a long man.
Yeah, and that was going to be my question, Robert, is how long of a leash would Mendoza have? Because if you look at up until last year, his track record as a professional pitcher hasn't been good at all. So it's kind of like waiting for the other shoe to drop. It's like, when is he going to, you know, turn back into a pumpkin, basically? Has he made enough changes?
Yeah, and that's understandable. That's definitely understandable. I mean, because, look, this is a guy who has a career ERA of, I believe it's 7.36 at the major league level, and mm-hmm. he was, I mean, Royals fans can remember 2010 when he was in the bullpen to start the year and was just awful. And, I mean, he was the worst pitcher in what was an awful bullpen to start 2010, which says a lot. But, yeah, I mean, certainly the skepticism is definitely understandable. But, you know, some guys, it just takes them longer to figure it out. I mean, there certainly have been guys who have been late bloomers. It does happen. And, I mean, you look at a guy like Philip Umber. He didn't look like he was going to be anything when he was with the Royals. Last year, he had a really solid year with the White Sox. Now, you could argue this year, you know, he's going to be back in the White Sox rotation. He's a prime candidate for regression, perhaps. But, I mean, the White Sox got a very good year out of Philip Umber when it looked like no one was going to get anything out of Philip Umber. And then you look at, you know, someone like Mendoza, maybe he could be somebody like that for the Kansas City Royals. I don't know that he's a long-term solution, but certainly he could be a guy who could help the Royals in 2012.
So Bruce Chen not looking good, looking bad. Mendoza looking very good. Then there's the one question that it seems like everybody had going out of last season. Luke Hochhaver, has he figured it out? Because he's been dealing in the spring training. Do we have what we drafted in Luke Hochhaver finally?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, Chen, his last two starts have been pretty good. He pitched today against the Mariners, looked very, very sharp. The start before that, he pitched very well also, and he says that he wasn't throwing his overhand fastball as much in the previous spring starts, and that's why he's been better. But he's looked closer to regular season form his last two starts. But as for Hochhaver, I mean, the key thing for him is going to be the changeup, because if he can throw his changeup effectively, that makes him that much better. He's always had difficulty trying to come up with an effective changeup. He feels that he finally has one now, has a grip that he's really comfortable with. So that certainly could make a difference. But, I mean, the Royals need Luke Hochhaver to pitch well. I think he's the most important pitcher in the rotation for the Royals this season, because if Hochhaver is able to be that workhorse and is a guy who can stop losing streaks and can be the anchor in that rotation, that makes the rest of the rotation better. I mean, Bruce Chen is the guy, he signed him to a two-year deal. Bruce Chen isn't a rotation anchor because he's not going to eat up innings. Bruce Chen averages a little under six innings per start. So that's not a guy you're going to look at as someone who's really going to eat up innings for you and go deep into games on a regular basis for you. But Hochhaver has the capability to do that, and the Royals really need him to do that to make the rotation better.
Robert, kind of switching gears here off from the pitching to you mentioned earlier talking about the Royals being strong up the middle defensively, and you mentioned Humberto Quintero. With that trade, the question I have after that trade was made, I mean, obviously, at this point, whatever trade Dayton Moore makes at the major league level, the Royals Twitter sphere just blows up in disgust at it. But, I mean, I think there were some relevant points that people were making that players like a Quintero or somebody might have been released soon, when people had to make the final roster cuts to finalize their rosters and everything. Do you feel like Dayton Moore made the right decision there, or did he jump the gun a little bit on that trade?
I think you do. You know, whenever you start thinking about what players might get released and all that, that's a very tough game to play. Because a lot of times releases, if they're coming early in camp, because there's certain dates if you release guys in camp where that determines how much of their salary you wind up paying. But once you start getting later into camp, you get guys who are getting released. I mean, a lot of times the releases don't happen until near the very end, or teams try to sneak guys through waivers like the Royals are going to do coming up here with Sean O'Sullivan. When other teams' rosters are set, you don't know. I mean, you can kind of scout it, and you can kind of look at other teams' rosters and think, well, they may release this guy, they may release that guy, but you just don't know. It's a really, really tough game to play. And it's really tough to say, well, this guy's definitely going to get released, or this guy definitely is not going to be with this club. It's a very tough thing to do. So,
I mean, when you look at it, I think that, I mean, the Royals gave up someone in Kelvin Chapman, a left-handed reliever. They have tons of left-handed pitching. So that's not really a big issue. Even if Chapman turns into something and becomes a quality left-handed reliever, I mean, the Royals figure to be able to produce more quality left-handed pitching from their system with all the arms that they have in the system. So that wasn't a big deal. And then you throw in that they, you know, they get Jason Bourgeois, who maybe they didn't need, but, I mean, he is a right-handed hitting outfielder that you can have off the bench. They didn't have a right-handed hitting outfielder, and he's got some speed. So that's just a bonus. And he has an option remaining, too, Bourgeois does. So I think that helps as well. So you don't have to keep him up at the major league level the entire year if you choose not to. So, I thought the trade was fine. I know that a few days later, Coy Hill got released, and people were like, well, Coy Hill, maybe they could have gotten him, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, I don't know that Coy Hill would have been any better than Humberto Quintero. I don't know that that would have, I mean, yeah, okay, maybe they wouldn't have had to give up Kelvin Chapman. But I just think that more often than not, you get what you pay for. And if you want something of value that's halfway decent, you generally have to give up something of value. And I think that's what the Royals had to do to get a catcher like Quintero.
Well, the final question, I should reset this. We're joined here by Robert Ford. You can follow him on Twitter at RAFord3. He's been the Royals pre- and post-game guy for about 4 years now. Great listen on the radio. Definitely check him out on 610 Sports, 610sports.com. Our last question comes from our chat room at RoyalManReport.com. From Jack Marsh 22 says, who, in your opinion, has the best chance of breaking out in the rotation this year? Who has that year that's going to propel this team to a winning record?
Well, I mean, we talked about Hochaver earlier, and I think if he has a really good year, it could be considered a breakout. Even though he had a good second half, it was just that, just the second half. So I think he's certainly a breakout candidate. I think that the Royals need Danny Duffy to break out. And if Danny Duffy is able to be somewhat consistent and be a reliable starter, then that would be tremendous for the Kansas City Royals. They really need Danny Duffy to be a breakout. So I guess if I had to look at it, I mean, I think probably Hochaver is the most likely to be a breakout candidate over the entire year. And I think that the Royals really need Danny Duffy to be a breakout candidate as well to achieve the sort of success that they think they're capable of achieving this year.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for coming on. And if folks don't know, Robert Ford actually has done play-by-play in the minor leagues, and he did calls for UNO, has some great calls out there on the interwebs of some games that he called down at Nebraska Omaha.
And he apparently tweets about hockey just randomly, too. So,
no, that's...
I tweet about everything randomly.
There you go. But, Robert, thank you so much for coming on. This was a great grab. People really like hearing from you. They really like your opinion on the Royals. And hopefully this is a better year so that those callers that you get on those post-game shows won't be quite as annoying with their depressed tones at the end of the game. So
they still will be.
I mean, it is true. This is Kansas City.
Yeah, they probably still will be, but that's okay.
But and I'll also catch Robert. He is the you contributed to the latest Up and In podcast, I think, didn't you?
That's right. Oh yeah.
Yeah. With Kevin Goldstein from Baseball Prospectus, who's become a good friend through Twitter and everything else. I did the AL Central preview. He had someone do a preview for each division, and so I did the AL Central. That was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you very much, Robert, and we'll be in touch soon, and we can't wait to hear you in the post-game shows. We're just, what is it now, 5 days away from the first real post-game show on 610 Sports. So we're excited to hear it, and we'll be joining you this weekend. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks. That was fun.
That's good stuff.
I like Robert. He's a good guy, and he honestly comes off so harsh on the air, and I think if you got all those callers that he got every day.
You
got
to go with a firm hand, or they don't learn.
I don't know about the rest of you guys, if you guys like to fish at all, but I like to fish, and I promise you I'm going somewhere with this.
Oh, boy.
But
here we go.
When it's really hot in the summer and you fish, all the fish go down near the bottom of the lake. So one of my friends who kind of taught me a lot about fishing, he always said just imagine fishing really, really like the slowest you've ever fished before and then fish even slower. And that's kind of what Robert Ford makes me think of, because every time people get all worked up about something when it comes to Royals, he always kind of stands out as a kind of voice of reason. He always kind of pulls things back a little bit. When And people kind of give him crap about this for whatever, but I think it's important, and I really like him for that reason, where when I start to, pitchforks, I want to storm the castle, I kind of look at what he's got to say about things, and I see, he kind of brings a bit of a different perspective that pulls things back into a little bit more reality.
Fishing stories with Jeff.
That's the next spinoff of the Royal Man Report. We're gonna have dating advice from Michael Engel and fishing stories with Jeff Hurd. I couldn't resist.
And with that, we probably need to go to break.
We'll be right back on the other side.
People will come, Royal Man. They'll come to the Royal Man Report for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll show up via a Google search, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at our podcast as innocent as children, longing for audio. Of course we don't mind if you have a listen, you'll say. It's a free download on Stitcher Radio or iTunes or on Kings of Kaufman. They'll click the link without even thinking about it. For it is time they have, and baseball discussion they lack. And they'll sit in their chair, sit at their desk on a perfect afternoon. They'll find they have a download all queued up and ready where they listened last week and cheered for their favorite segments. And they'll listen to the show, and it'll be as if they dipped themselves in magic waters. The insight will be so thick they'll have to brush it away from their faces. People will come, Royal Man. The one constant through all the months, Royal Man, has been baseball and the Royal Man Report. Kansas City has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It has been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt, and erased again. But the Royal Man Report has marked the time. This podcast, these listeners, it's a part of our past, Royal Man. It reminds us of all that was once good and could be again. Oh, people will come, Royal Man. People will most definitely come.
Exclusive interview with the new iPhone 4 assistant, Siri. Hello, Siri. How are you doing today?
Thank you. It's nice for me to be here.
Siri, you've been pretty busy with the new iPhone launch. What do you do for fun?
It's just been crazy around here. I've been looking for a place to get away and wind down, but I have not been able to find anything my style on the plaza.
Well, have you tried Kelly's Westport Inn?
I show Kelly's Westport Inn to be at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue.
It's got way more than that. It's been voted by The Pitch as one of the best places to meet guys in Kansas City. It's got a great laid-back vibe, plenty of TVs to watch sports, an awesome pizza place in the back, and plenty of drink specials during the week.
You say it's a nice place to meet guys? Accessing. This sounds like the place for me. Shutting down now.
You can't shut down. If you want to meet Siri and other great Kansas Cityans, check out Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road in beautiful, laid-back Westport. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And I talked to some people. I don't know what his show is called. He's going to get mad at me, but he's Royal Man. You were on his show, too, I think. And so I did his podcast, and he kind of got on me for ripping the Royals when we talked about the top tens down.
Those guys know their system, man.
They do very well, yeah. And it is still down, but you know what? It's still really, really good.
And guys, isn't it great to talk about some baseball that's really, really good?
I like good baseball.
Yes.
Good baseball is good.
You wouldn't believe it, that being a Royals fan, but you
better than
like
talking about Kansas.
You know, we had some chat room chatterers that were not enjoying the Kansas talk.
I'm pretty sure Martin.
I don't know what to tell you. I mean, we had to listen to Mizzou things. We talked about K-State stuff. Whatever.
I mean, I don't understand this whole basketball thing. My college doesn't play.
No, you don't. The ball is shaped funny.
It does make me laugh, though. I saw a Missouri fan, Mizzou Matt. I think he changed his Twitter handle to ESPN something. But Mizzou Matt tweeted that his cousins from Nebraska called and were trying to give him a hard time about the Norfolk State loss. Nebraskans, we don't get to give anybody a hard time about basketball. at all.
Did they even make the NIT?
No. Okay. And I went back because I've got some friends at work that are K-State fans, KU fans, whatever. We were talking about teams, the old Big 8 teams, and who had had good runs in the tournament. Nebraska's never won a tournament game. They actually got in as a 3 seed and lost. So Missouri, they feel that. They know the pain of what it's like to be a very high seed and not quite get through.
KU's done the 3 seed loss before.
Yeah.
I like that all three of you said whoops at the exact same time. That was nice. That was pretty.
I think we're all starting to get our cycle synced up. It's like when a bunch of women work together in an office pool.
We've been doing this a little while, so it's kind of getting good. I don't know. That's what people tell me.
Over
good.
A year now, right? Not necessarily all four of us, but the show.
No. It's only been good since I got on.
Right.
Right. It's gotten much worse when I came along.
True.
You know, I didn't ever notice it with him talking until we had him on there, but Robert's from the East Coast.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of that New York too.
He seems very proper and prim and proper.
Well, not only that, I can't remember what word it was, but he kept saying something that would just it had that New England accent to it.
He went to Syracuse. So.
He's very another one of those Syracuse alumni. Apparently, you either work in New York or Kansas City.
Apparently,
if you guys
are
from Syracuse.
Yep,
so
that's it.
That's the only option they have.
Well, we didn't really talk about anything at the top of the show because we went right to Curtis Kitchen, but we did do a show last week from Kelly's Westport Inn, and it had some fantastic guests, too. It had
that was a fun show.
It had that works in Indianapolis with green wig that right. did not like the burning of Peyton Manning.
The flip cup dominator.
Yes.
It had Zachary with the tattoo.
Zachary, who shows you the effects of living in the womb for 5 years.
Zachary may have been our best guest ever, guys.
Oh, he was good.
He was good. I got more comments about that kid they were still talking about it at the bar when I was in there last night.
He still hasn't blinked either.
No, he hasn't.
So I didn't even notice that until after you guys said that.
I mean, watch it. Guys.
He didn't blink? I didn't even notice this.
And you can watch if you're an audio only listener, then you are really missing out. Go over to youtube.com/RoyalManReport and there's just about all our shows now are videotaped as well. And we have some fun. We put a funny picture of Curtis Kitchen up when he was talking, when he sat behind. And he told that story last week on the show when he sat behind Bob Knight and he was eating ice cream and all that good stuff. So it's a lot of fun.
And I didn't really know Curtis until last week. I talked to him on Twitter some, whatever. You had talked to him a little bit during the whole Radio Wars thing. He was a really nice guy. He came out, really supported us.
He's a nice guy. He's a big fan of the show, too.
Super awesome guy.
So we're going to try it again. We're not going to do it, I don't think, as big this coming week, but we're hoping to have Friday.
Opening day.
Friday's going to be our show.
Just a quick note on Curtis Kitchen. For people, he's not all K-State. If you go like Curtis Kitchen,
no, it's a general sports blog.
It's Kansas City sports. So he talks about it all. Just to kind of plug that for a second.
Not to scare anybody off.
Yeah, he's fantastic, though. Definitely check out CurtisKitchen.com. It's an A-plus site. And then, of course, Nate Bucati. Follow him on Twitter at Nate Bucati.
Nate_Bucati.
Is it Nate underscore?
It is.
Oh, then I've been linking it wrong all night.
Yes, you have.
Oops. Oh, but that go me. that's what happens. I don't like underscores. They're not my friend. We did that. We're going to do it again Friday. We're going to try to broadcast about 7 o'clock, I think. The game's at 9, so if we're going to ramble for 90 minutes like we normally do, we're going to need to start by 7 so we can tear down and enjoy the ball game. Hopefully Bruce Chen doesn't get absolutely owned by this very offensive LA Angels offense.
What are the odds?
A lot of right-handed power, too. That's kind of my big concern for the first game. You know, Pujols, Torrey Hunter, Mark Trumbo, those guys. Kendrys Morales, a lot of heavy hitters, and they're all from the right side.
Martin Steele wants to remind everybody that you can follow Martin Steele at Martin Steele.
Okay. But you can always find him at Spit Cup.
Right.
Spit Cup, right.
Yes, you can follow him in person if you go to Spit Cup.
Right at the end of the bar.
You know, I'm not even sure if this guy's real. Supposedly he was at the Rally House event that was a few weeks ago, and we just crossed paths
I think it's an automated chatbot.
Chatbot. We're calling you out, Martin Steele. Prove
I am
your
Martin
existence.
Steele.
Yeah.
I love Spit Cup.
I love Spit Cup.
Oh, Spit Cup Lordy. Is my friend. Spit Cup. Beep, bop, boop.
What's that R2?
Back to baseball. Wow. I'm
now he's cussing in the chat room.
What's the problem, Dave?
He muted. He's a big MU guy, and he muted the show during the Nate Buchanan KU talk. And of course, yeah,
I don't blame him. Honestly, I mean, it's
Robert Ford, you know, AR Ford 3, having the job that all of us would love to have, and spending 6 weeks in spring training. Mm-hmm. That's a bad day, but good. Congratulations to him. He's worked hard to get to where he's at, and he does a good show. So it's going to be hard for me because I do like Robert, but you know, Three Guys in a Garage, they're friends of the program, friends of mine. Without them, I would have probably never started doing this.
Why they call it Radio Wars, man? You got to pick a side.
Yeah, they're doing the post game show, so
draw lots.
You know, but outside of that, really, I mean, anything you guys want to wrap up spring training with here?
Well, here's the big thing that we didn't talk about yet. Alex Gordon signed his extension.
Hey, Alex Gordon is extended.
Works out to, it's basically, if you consider it 5 years for $50 million, because it's going to be a four-year contract for $37.5 million. The fifth year is his option, which I think that's probably what may have been holding things up. You know, because they've been talking extension with him all off season, and they finally got it done. I think both sides wanted to get it done before the season started. So now, you know, $50 million, he's going to be around through probably 2016.
And if nothing else, I think this proves that Kansas City has the two best GMs at negotiating contracts in all professional sports.
Oh,
I mean, the amount of club-friendly contracts that Dayton Moore and Scott Pioli have gotten their teams to sign last year has been quite, I mean, the Salvador Perez signing is going to be huge. The Alcides Escobar signing is good. I mean, this Alex Gordon signing, I didn't think you'd be able to get 4 years for $37.5 million.
Yeah,
I thought it'd be.
There were some people expecting like $14, $15 million a season on average. And you know, they didn't get that. I mean, it's going to be $10 million a season.
I thought 5 years, 60 was like baseline. That was where it would have started. Yeah. If I was Alex Gordon's agent, that's where I would have started.
Yeah.
But so, you know, kudos to him for a great signing there.
Three notes on this. Yes. First off, it did take a while to get done, so you wonder what held it up. I mentioned to Rainey, I wonder if it did. You notice that this does not have the normal two club options.
Yeah.
And that's like the Dayton Moore signature, you know.
Yeah, he likes his to tack those on.
So I'm wondering if that was what held it up, that he didn't want the club options, he wanted the player option. Because, I mean, this is a powerful contract. If he turns out to not dominate the next 4 years, then he's got $13 million
in the bank.
Yeah. So good job by him on getting that deal. Second thing, now I think we officially have permission that if anybody says that this team doesn't sign their players, doesn't care about their team, they're just trading away people, you know, letting option years run out, you can officially punch them in the face.
We don't condone violence, but you can punch them in the face.
I am condoning violence. I am so tired of hearing people say about how this team, players are just going to run off to the Yankees.
The thing about that is even the last player to actually sign with the Yankees immediately after leaving the Royals was Chili Davis.
Chili Davis.
2001.
I could go for some Chili Davis right now.
I could too as
nice,
well.
Nice, like Cajun
good,
sauce. That'd be
indeed.
Nice.
Indeed. Throw some Tabasco in
well
there.
Well done.
Right.
Love it.
Can we go fishing afterwards? What's your third note on that?
So, well, I'd like to say to that, though, disclaimer. Just signing the long-term contract doesn't mean that they can't trade him later. So it's not necessarily...
Right, just look at Zach Greinke.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily a firm, concrete word keeping him. I mean, let's make that clear.
Greinke won
out. Absolutely. And it's definitely a great sign. But it's not, you know, if this thing implodes this year and the Royals go 62-100, I mean...
There
could be some things that happen. So that is just... important to remember that.
It's not a lockdown for either side.
And normally I'm the guy with the blue Kool-Aid, but I guys, you just got to realize, and this is my third note on this, this does not equate to going after Hosmer next. I know Buster Olney said they've done him in financial order, and so next up should be Hosmer. But Hosmer has come out and said that he's not interested in signing until he's had at least one opening day in the big leagues, which he'll have this year. And let's be real, guys. He, you know, it's like Jason Park says, he's probably not going to re-sign in Kansas City. Maybe he does. Maybe we get lucky and he does sign here. But he's not going to do it this year or next because he's going to
build up value. Because you look at the way he's swinging this spring.
Oh, man.
He's incredible.
He is,
I mean,
good.
The other night,
he's having a
he took
spring.
A shot, you know, the opposite field, perfect, gorgeous swing, and it hit the top of the wall. You could hear the thud. I mean, and he's... I expect him to do that all year.
Even if Hosmer leaves in 2017, he's the second best. He could easily be the second best player in Royals history, even with just that short of time.
He'll definitely
span.
Be the best first baseman.
If I was his agent, I mean, we're selfish as Royals fans. We want him to renegotiate whatever. But I mean, if I'm working for Eric Hosmer, I'm his agent. I say not at all.
If I'm working for Eric Hosmer as his agent, I'm kicking back.
Well,
put my feet in the
if
pool.
You're doing that,
5 years
you're
from
Scott
now,
Morris, and
we're gonna
doing
get
well.
We're gonna get you a $200 million contract in about 5 years.
Yeah, he's
gonna
get
an
Albert Pujols, Prince Fielder style contract.
It sucks, but you know that's the thing that gives you an idea of what the window is, and it also gives you an idea that you know the team still has to continue to develop players behind these guys in case they do either flame out. You know, at any given time, someone could just stop hitting. Mike Moustakas, maybe he never comes around. You know, you have to have a backup plan. Eric Hosmer, you got to figure, okay, there's a chance until we get it signed, he's not going to be around past that 2017. So, you know, you want to have somebody who, at least in mind and continue to develop players.
The thing is, we need Moustakas to have a good year this year and be able to lock him up like we have these others. And then if we lose Hosmer, we lose Hosmer, but maybe we can keep the rest. But it's looked good. It's been Butler. It's been Soria. It's, you know, you've got up the middle locked up now. We just need to find a legitimate second baseman if it's Johnny G or whoever else. This team has a chance to be really good in the next couple of years, and we deserve it.
You know, it makes it a little pitching. It'd be fine.
Yeah, John.
You know, if John Lamb recovers from his Tommy John surgery, he should probably have some starts come. You know, late spring this year, and you know, from your first Tommy John surgery,
or,
you know, velocity actually picks up a little.
You
bit.
You could just send down pitchers, the guy with the 0.00 ERA.
You could do that.
Him, so,
you could do that
just because he didn't not have a roster spot.
Hopefully,
I'm not
better. Hopefully, he gets back to the big leagues. That being Tommy Hotovy, but you know, John. Just a quick note on John Lamb. He did say that I know he's been working out. I follow him on Facebook. That's right, I'm a stalker. No,
yep.
No. The Lambs are really good folks. And he was talking about how he was 236 pounds on December 22nd, now 195. So he's getting in shape. He is ready to come back. And, you know, the thing is, there's nothing to say that the Royals won't sign pitching. You know, we don't need to count on John Lamb coming back to make this work. If this team is good, they're going to want to win. I mean, Glass would love to put a second World Series trophy in the Hall of Fame. Don't be confused. He likes his money, but I think he would like the notoriety that goes with that. So I think that's a good place to just hop off the bus here and head to opening day. We're going to be out at Kelly's this Friday, and then next Friday we'll be at the stadium. Come find us in Lot N. We may or may not be broadcasting.
Kelly's this Friday, and then somewhere near a large sporting event on the Friday after, so.
But, you know, until next week, I'm Casey Royal, man.
I am watching the national championship tomorrow night.
I am as well.
I'm Fake Ned.
and we are the Royal Man Report. Thank you guys so much for supporting us for a year. We'll be back next week from Kelly. Until then, go Royals.
This is the Echo Network.